Spirit Blade Underground, episode 388. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 388.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm still Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, a review of zombie drama Maggie, as well as part four of my bookshelf tour, plus how geeks can feel more thankful, and info on some free Christmas music DLC, quote unquote, I should say, for Fallout 4. Man, that's a lot of show. Let's get to it. Well, thank you all for joining me on this historic day. The serum I've created will give anyone who drinks it the power to objectively know the difference between something that is cool and something that is lame. The serum is available to anyone who provides a review for the Spirit Blade Underground podcast and is completely safe. Allow me to demonstrate.
Hello, Spirit Bladers. This is David Arrington of the Helix Reviews podcast, and I'm popping on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast to give you a review of Maggie. Now, this review is actually an edited down version of the review I gave on my podcast. And normally, when I submit something to the Spirit Blade podcast or something, you know, I want it to be new and fresh and original content, you know, not something that also played on my podcast, you know. I want to send in new and original content. That said, this is about a movie called Maggie, and this is a movie that pretty much no one saw and no one has heard of, really. I mean, it's a pretty small movie, really, that came out recently, and I kind of wanted to talk about it here so that maybe a few more people will hear about it and maybe a few more heads will get turned to this movie that I found pretty interesting. That said, let's just jump right here into my review. So Maggie stars Abigail Breslin as the titular Maggie, and she's the daughter of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, Wade. And basically, this is a movie about a father-daughter relationship, and the daughter happens to be turning into a zombie. This is a very drama-heavy zombie story, but not like The Walking Dead. You know, The Walking Dead, they're going around blowing zombies' brains out left and right and all the time, right? This is not that movie. This is a very slow movie. This is a very quiet, somber movie, and it just focuses in on this relationship between a father and a daughter. And in this world, zombies, it doesn't take, you know, minutes or hours for them to turn. It takes days and weeks for them to turn. And so basically, you know, before this movie takes place, the daughter was bitten. And this is just about that period of time in between, you know, when the daughter was bitten and before, you know, she turns full zombie mode. And this is, again, it's just the drama between the father and the daughter in this scenario. And that is very interesting. I've never seen a zombie movie with this take on zombies, or with this take, you know, with this kind of story set in a zombie universe. You know, that's weird. And there's a lot of potential there. This movie doesn't live all the way up to the potential that it has. The movie starts out, and for the first probably half hour of the movie, maybe even a little more, I was not very invested in this father-daughter relationship because they hadn't developed it enough, in my opinion. They're doing some things in that first half hour, 45 minutes, that are interesting, and they could be very engaging had I been introduced to these characters. But really, for as much as this movie's really going for this dramatic, you know, drama that happens to be in a world of zombies, they didn't focus enough in the first, like, half hour of the movie on the main two characters. And so, you know, watching for the first half hour, I was a little bored. You know, I was like, okay, this is interesting, kind of, but it's not really what I'm wanting from this movie, and it's not what this movie could be. But after that half hour, they start developing the characters better, I felt. And they start telling you more about the characters, and you start seeing more of what these characters are like. And I was like, man, I'm starting to actually really like these characters and enjoy these characters for what they're, you know, what they're doing here on screen. And that's when this movie kind of kicks it up into high gear, not as far as action or anything goes, but just as far as my involvement in the movie goes. By the end of the movie, I was very invested in this, you know, relationship, and I was like, what's, you know, well, how's this gonna go down, you know? Because, you know, the father kind of has to make a hard decision, you know. Does he try to, you know, keep his daughter at home and safe, you know, away from, you know, turning her into the, you know, the authorities who will just end up killing her because she's going to become a zombie? Or should he turn her in? Or, like, what is he going to do? And there's this whole big decision that's very interesting throughout the movie. And I was like, okay, how's this going to go down? What's going to go down? Seeing all that play out, it's like, oh man, they're really doing some good stuff here. And I wish that they had started that earlier so that I'd have been engaged throughout the whole movie. But the ending definitely saves the movie, because if it was all going to be like the beginning, I would have been like, not as good as it could have been. It's kind of a bummer. But now, it's like, after seeing it, it's like, yeah, it could have been better because of that first half hour. But now that they actually developed the characters and they got me engaged, I was very interested in this movie, and I was like, oh man, I really like the way they're telling the story and the way they're doing zombies in this movie is unlike anything I've ever seen. It's the most probably realistic representation of zombies that I've ever seen, which is weird to say, but it's true. Like, the way they do the zombies in this movie, it's more like how actually a disease would come about, you know? I mean, they have the disease, and it's like they're slowly kind of dying off, you know? And then also the emotions of the characters as they're dealing with these zombies feels so much more real than a lot of zombie stories, you know? I mean, The Walking Dead excluded, kind of, because they handle zombies really well in The Walking Dead. But this is a very interesting representation of zombies, and one that I have not seen before. And it's very cool and very realistic, strangely enough. And I definitely enjoyed their take on that. And in a lot of ways, it felt like an independent movie, because it's like, oh man, we don't necessarily have this big budget. I mean, they got Arnold Schwarzenegger, so they must have had some kind of a budget, but they didn't have this massive budget that they could use, and so they really had to rely on these very practical effects and these very just character drama instead of, you know, monster action or anything of that nature. And so in that way, it felt like an independent movie, you know, because they don't have, you know, the budget or anything to do all this crazy stuff. So they work around that and make this very character-centric zombie movie, which is very interesting and unlike anything that I've ever seen before. Thematically, definitely father-daughter relationships thematically, and doing anything to protect your daughter and, you know, not allowing anything bad to happen to your daughter or anything, you know, definitely I think this is a very strong father-daughter kind of movie, because, you know, it represents the dad as, you know, someone who cares very deeply about his daughter, you know? He loves her so much that he doesn't want, you know, anything bad to happen to her, and he will protect her, and he will, you know, give his life for his daughter. You know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, the impression that you're getting from this relationship with these two characters, and I really enjoyed that. I really liked that dynamic. That's not a dynamic you see in movies very often, and yet it's huge here, and I really liked it. But overall, I really enjoyed Maggie. Now, it's definitely not a perfect movie, especially just because of that first half hour where they didn't develop the characters enough in that first half hour for me to care that much. But once they started developing these characters and, you know, once they started getting more into, you know, these characters and what they're doing and the decisions they're having to make and their relationships with each other, I really started enjoying this movie. And by the end of the movie, I was like, oh man, this is so good. You know, if the whole movie was like this, this would have been a great movie. But the whole movie wasn't like this, and so it was a good movie. So overall, Maggie is a good movie with some interesting themes and a very strange and unusual, but also very cool take on a zombie apocalypse type situation. If you see the trailer and, you know, you're interested in this movie, I would recommend checking this out. Maggie is rated PG-13 for disturbing thematic material, including bloody images and some language. I would give it 4 out of 5 stars on the enjoyability scale. That's the scale I use over at the Helix Reviews podcast. Thank you, Spirit Bladers, for listening, and thank you, Peter Franson, for allowing me to be on your podcast once again. This is David Arrington of the Helix Reviews podcast, signing out. Bye-bye, guys.
I want to remind you guys to go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. Crap. I was doing good there for a little bit. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating Usenet 1.0.
I want to remind you guys once again that gift codes are now available at spiritblade.com. So if you would like to gift one of our audio dramas to someone else digitally, you can do that right now at spiritblade.com. Just go browse to the audio drama you're interested in and look, and you'll notice that there's a version that says gift code at the end. So please take advantage of that if you're interested in kind of sharing what we're doing with someone else that is not into CDs. this week on youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, you'll find the bookshelf tour video. It's the video that goes along with the audio that that's on today's show. And then also my video for the Fallout 4 free Christmas music, quote unquote, DLC. I have no idea. It could not be the case at all. I never know kind of like what's going to really strike with people and kind of get lots of hits and stuff like that. But part of the reason I put this one out there is I thought, you know, Fallout 4 is a really big deal right now. And this might be kind of a connection point for many people. So, and it also hopefully adds value to their Fallout 4 experience. So, in particular, if you know anybody that's playing Fallout 4, please consider getting on the YouTube channel and sharing that video. It's a short video, with someone that's playing, and enjoying Fallout 4. And maybe through that, they can get connected to, what we're doing at Christian Geek Central, or maybe they can get into a slightly deeper conversation with you regarding spiritual matters. You never know what God might use or how he might use it. So if you know anybody that's playing and enjoying Fallout 4, please, please consider sharing that video with them at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. As a reminder, and as always, guys, I want your voice and your interests to be a part of this podcast and Christian Geek Central. So whether you've got an idea for a segment already or you just want to be a part of the fun, we want to find a way to plug you in, let your voice be heard. And it's also a great way to promote what you're doing if you'd like. So for more info, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com. Every now and then people ask me what's on my mind, so I thought I'd take a minute to answer that question. Now pay attention, please, because I don't think I can do this more than once. All right, this part is my parietal lobe, and if I dig back in here, I can pull out some of my occipital. And I don't know what this part is, but whenever I touch it, I smell peanut butter. Hey, Peter Franson from ChristianGeekCentral.com and Spirit Blade Productions. I got my timer set for 10 minutes, give or take. Let's see how far I can get in part 4 of my bookshelf tour. Now, last time we left off with the Matrix videos, really all of these kind of like overflow movies that, you know, crept up from upstairs. Now we're getting into some other stuff down here. Now, things have moved around a little bit since I last made one of these videos, but we're not going to end up skipping anything as a result. They just got changed around a bit. So these are all my kind of like audio drama production resources. Spirit Blade Productions, one of the main things that I do for that is produce audio drama. So these are like different horror sound effects, different sci-fi sound effects, different like general real world typey sound effects. These are footsteps. And then a lot of these things here are like music cues or like fractions of music cues that I can stitch together however I want to, either in some cases, depending how like split apart the tracks are, I can make completely original music. In other cases, it's music that already exists that I can just cut together to fit the scene in the way that I want. So yeah, that's kind of like what all this stuff is here. Okay, now so we get into the stuff that you're probably more interested in, and that is video games. So this is my NES video game collection. Many of these are games that I grew up with, but I repurchased when I got older because at one point we sold our NES, and I used my part of that money, since it belonged to me and my two sisters, I used my part of that money to buy the Super Nintendo, and you know, and so we ditched all of our games at that point. But later on in life, I repurchased an NES. And then went back and bought a lot of the games that I used to have. One of them being Batman. Now, this was the... I won't pull all of them out to look at the covers. I'm sure you can find those images elsewhere. But the Batman movie tie-in, this was... I didn't sell. I traded my Scorponok Decepticon Transformer with a friend in order to get this video game. And I really enjoyed it a lot, even though it's largely a Ninja Gaiden knockoff. It's, you know, it uses those mechanics well, and it's, you know, really enjoyable. And let's see here, Bionic Commando. Like, all these games are too hard for me, all of them, except for, like, the role-playing games. All of them are too hard for me, so my Game Genie is downstairs. The boys, my two sons, use that. We have an NES downstairs now that they use. I actually use these games when I play them now. I play them with my Retron 5 that I picked up over last summer. So, but the old NES that I purchased a while back is downstairs along with the Game Genie for my boys to use. Bionic Commando, oh man, that's way too hard for me. But I mean, I used to love playing through it with cheat codes. Like my idea of a good Saturday night was to just like put in the Invincible cheat codes and like play Bionic Commando from beginning to end. Tons of fun. This Clash of Demon Head, this is one of the last games that I ever bought for the Nintendo before moving on to the Super Nintendo when I was younger. And that one's cool. It's got like some RPG, I guess, qualities, because you just got all these different kinds of like upgrades that you can buy for your character as you progress throughout the game. But it's still, you know, way, way, way too hard for me. Final Fantasy. This was, man, the game just blew me away. A lot of these games, like so far, like Batman, Bionic Commando, not Clash of Demon, and Final Fantasy, I play and talk about my history with them on in greater detail in the retro live stream, which has been sliced up into little bits, and you can find that also on our YouTube channel here. Iron Tank, this was one that we got as part of like a collection of like cheap games from a, you know, when they first started like selling NES games used, you know, we got like a you know, like a bundle of them at some, it wasn't a GameStop, but it was something like that. It was almost like a little island store in the middle of a mall. Yeah, this was one of the games that we got. And so that was kind of fun. Again, way too hard for me, but I beat it with cheat codes. Lots of fun. Kung Fu. Now, this game is not one that I grew up with, but I purchased it after rebuying my NES. Yes, because it just kind of felt like a classic that I kind of wanted to have. I remember a friend having it, and like it just seemed so cool to me. I mean, of course, it's really bland now, and I could never for years find cheat codes that would allow me to get through the whole game. And just recently, like maybe a year ago or something like that, I found some cheat codes online that had just been created by a user in the last few years that allowed you to be invincible, and so I could get through and see the end of the game, which was really satisfying. Legend of Zelda, also a game that I did not grow up with. I tend to not be a big fan of like puzzles, and I guess this, and you could, you know, The Legend of Zelda definitely has some RPG elements, but it's not it doesn't have the ability for me to grind my way out of trouble. When I'm the thing I like about role-playing games is, like, if a boss is too hard for me and I'm just not smart enough or quick enough or whatever it is, I can go and fight little minions for like an hour and then come back, I'm stronger, and then I can beat the boss, you know. And in my experience, you can't really do that in Legend of Zelda. I mean, I guess it's been a while since I played it. Maybe there is some way to kind of do that. But anyway, it's all the puzzle stuff I'm not really into. But the exception to that, I suppose, would be Maniac Mansion. Now, I did try to replay this recently during my retro live stream and kind of just discovered some clunky things that nostalgia had caused me to forget about. So I don't know that I would come back to a point-and-click adventure today, but that was a huge game for me. I mean, it was... me and a friend discovered it when, you know, we were having a sleepover, I think, at his house. We rented the game, and we just had a ton of fun with that. And it's that was really, I think, maybe even before I discovered RPGs. And but it, you know, it's just tons of fun. And now with the remake coming out for Day of the Tentacle on PS4, I'm definitely looking forward to giving at least Day of the Tentacle a try, and hopefully I can get wooed back into point and click adventure games a little bit, because when they are fun and when they're not clunky for me, I really have a blast. Narc. Okay, this is a pretty substanceless game. I think I repurchased this only, I think, for nostalgia value. It's like, oh yeah, I remember liking this, and oh, okay, it's really cheap here at a used bookstore or whatever, so, you know, I'll go ahead and grab it. But, you know, it's a two-player simultaneous co-op, go down the street and, like, machine gun criminals to death, like drug dealers, just blow them all away. So yeah, pretty crazy. I think it was kind of controversial when it came out, but I don't really remember. And then Ninja Gaiden 1 and 2, and of course, well, not of course, maybe you're a lot smarter than I am, you probably are, and you probably said Ninja Gaiden your whole life, but for me it was Ninja Gaiden for years. I've been trying to discipline myself in the last, I don't know how many years, to like say, you know, oh, like when video reviewers started doing their things, you know, like G4 and GameSpot and stuff like that. It's like, oh, they're all saying Gaiden. Is that how you say it? Gaiden? I really thought it was Gaiden. Me and my friends said Gaiden. Oh, well. So we're just uncultured Americans, and so we say Gaiden, but I'm trying to break myself of it. Rad Racer, another game that I'm terrible at, but it's fun with cheat codes. Speaking of, Super Mario Brothers 2 and 3 fall into the same camp with me. I love exploring games, and the games like this, the Mario games, are just a ton of fun to explore. They're just way too difficult and frustrating for me, and when I die repeatedly in the same hole again and again and again and again, and then lose all my lives and have to start back at the beginning, that's not fun for me. And then I suddenly can't explore anymore. So I like to just use cheat codes with those kinds of games, so I can just, because that's what I'm in games for, not to like show my skills. I have no skills. I'm there to explore the game world created by the designers. And I, you know. Anyway, Wizards and Warriors was really the first game that allowed me to do that. The first game that I was able to beat without cheat codes, that was like a, you know, a hand-eye coordination kind of game. And if you've ever played it, you know it's really, really forgiving. Whenever you die, you don't lose any of your weapons. You don't lose any of your gems even. I think just maybe your score is reset to zero. I can't even remember. It's so forgiving when you die. So yeah, lots of fun. Chrono Trigger. Oh my gosh. Okay, so now we're getting to Super NES games. These are in alphabetical order, so it's not, you know, it's not the first game that I played, but I really enjoy this game. I haven't played, I don't think I've ever played it all the way through again via some kind of remake, like on my phone or on some other, you know, console, like the virtual console on the Wii or anything like that. But I've seen, and I haven't seen all of the endings. But man, that's a really enjoyable RPG. And I did play it again as recently as maybe, I don't know, I want to say 5 years ago. I think most people will tell you that it really does hold up pretty well. Very enjoyable game. And let's see here. This is kind of shrouded in shadow here. What is this? Oh, Contra. Contra 3. Contra 3, The Alien Wars. Sorry, my focus is kind of bad here, but yeah, that was another one that, you know, if you got cheat codes, it's fun to just run around with your buddy and just get blown away a lot and blow away other things a lot. And this is a game, this is one of the, there's a whole video on this where I talk about the death and return of Superman, both this video game and the original story when it was released in comic books, and kind of my reaction to that. So that was a pretty big deal for those of us who lived through that story being published. So anyway, you can check out that video here on this channel. Let's see, what else? What's the last one on this Final Fantasy II. Okay, now I didn't play Final Fantasy II until after already playing Final Fantasy III. Because I just wanted to, once I got my Super NES, that was around the time that Final Fantasy III was about to come out. But when I went back and played Final Fantasy II, really, really enjoyed it. I would say that I enjoyed 3/6, because this is actually, of course, you know, Final Fantasy IV in Japan. They kind of did weird things with the numbering. I really did enjoy this game. And, you know, some people will say, you know, this is actually kind of the darkest and most serious of the games. And I suppose in some ways that is true, just because of the nature of some of the deaths that take place in the game. But I think that the visual style is still fairly bright. This is the game where they introduced the active time battle system, though, which really stressed me out when I first encountered it. I first encountered it in Final Fantasy III, but this is the game, I believe, where it was first introduced in 4/ you know, America 2. And stressed the crap out of me. But, you know, I managed. All right, let's see. What else? Moving down. Final Fantasy III is the very next one. Now, this one, these are my original cartridges, by the way. Like, none of these were repurchased. You know, because I still have the Super NES that I first bought with my own money when I way back in, it was high school when I got it. And so none of these games, I don't think, are repurchased here. These are all my originals, and it feels really geeky cool to have the original box for Final Fantasy III. But you know what? I'm not going to talk about Final Fantasy III. My timer just went off. So we will start with Final Fantasy III and the rest of these Super NES games next time on part 5 of my bookshelf tour. All right. Thanks for watching. Bye bye.
Hey, I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions and ChristianGeekCentral.com. Maybe like me and tons of other gamers, you've been spending a lot of your free time trekking across the wasteland of Fallout 4, listening to cheerful, carefree music of a bygone era as you try to cope with the harsh realities of post-apocalyptia. And maybe, like me, you wish those radio stations had some old-timey Christmas music options at about this time of year. Well, with just a few extra cable connections in your home, you can have a radio station playing on your Pip-Boy featuring Christmas classics by many of the same kinds of singers you've grown accustomed to in the world of Fallout. Singers like Gene Autry, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Andy Williams, Peggy Lee, The Andrews Sisters, Johnny Mathis, Fred Astaire, the list goes on. Here's how you can get it. Before running the audio from your console or TV into your home theater speakers, use a cable to connect it to a splitter like this one. Then run another audio cable out from a web browsing device like a laptop or tablet into the remaining open port on the splitter. Finally, run the combined signal from the splitter through a cable going into your home theater or external speakers. As a side note, you may need some couplers like these to make your connections. Take a look at your current cable connections before you make your trip to the store. Make sure the in-game music volume is turned all the way down, and then use your laptop or mobile device to go to 181.fm and select the Christmas Classics channel from the list of available Christmas channel options. And naturally, if you don't feel the need to have the music coming from the same speakers as your game audio, you can just play the music straight from your browsing device speakers without bothering with any of these cables. Adjust the volume on your browsing device to suit your tastes, and just like that, you've got old-timey Christmas music celebrating the beginning of God's rescue plan for humanity, reminding us, even as we trudge through imaginary post-apocalyptia, that there is real hope to be had because of Jesus. Have fun building your settlements to the sounds of yesteryear, and then join us at ChristianGeekCentral.com for tons more content and community as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Well, it's been a short work week. I'm actually recording this on Monday, and just in anticipation of just not having the time that I would like to continue on into the Book of Hebrews, I was originally not going to put any kind of In Search of Truth segment here, but I'm going to go ahead and attempt that now. If you're new to the show, in this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture. I'm just a guy using resources
resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth. And I hope that you'll do that with me. It's something that we can all do. So this time, I guess I just wanted to talk about thankfulness. And specifically, what was coming to mind was the difficulty that geeks can have, me first and foremost, in being thankful. You know, lots of geeks have past wounds. And in that department, I don't really have any serious past wounds that, at least that I would consider serious. But many geeks do. And alongside that, a number of geeks have very vivid imaginations. And I think when you put the two of those things together, or sometimes, like in my case, just a vivid imagination and a tendency to worry by itself or to think negatively by itself, there's just all kinds of reasons that we can find ourselves using our imagination in all the wrong ways. And that takes us to a place where we're unable to be thankful. You know, where we just look at life and, you know, we look at the holidays that are coming up. We think of Thanksgiving. And maybe especially if this is a time of year where there's lots of kind of family stuff that you're going to be interacting with, that's just you're anticipating is going to be very stressful. You know, you might be thinking to yourself, crap, what in the world do I have to be thankful for? And maybe, you know, like me, you can get the answer right on a test. You know, if someone says, well, what should we be thankful for? Well, I'm thankful for God's grace. I'm thankful for eternal life. I'm thankful for, you know, my son and my sons and my wife and stuff like that. You know, but I mean, are we really feeling thankful? You know, we can get the answers right on the test, but how do we get to that place of really feeling thankful, of that really being a reality for us? Because it's so easy for me to just dwell on all the reasons that I don't have to be thankful, the reasons that I feel frustrated, the reasons that I say, God, why is life like this? Why am I dealing with, you know, X, Y, and Z in my life? That's just where my mind tends to go. And you add to that, you know, the imagination of a geek that I have, and I can also spend time just worrying about how things could be worse and how they will be worse, you know, as I, you know, have such and such coming up ahead of me, you know, and, you know, so I guess I just wanted to spend a little bit of time, you know, on thankfulness and on like how we, that can be real for us. And, you know, it's interesting. About, I can't remember how long ago it was now. I'm not going off of any notes, so I'm going to try really hard not to say anything heretical. I mean, I always try, but I didn't do it. I did very little like prep for this. This is more of an In Search of Truth segment that's a little different from the norm. Even when I'm not going through the Bible, even when I'm doing some kind of topical thing, I usually do extensive study and notes beforehand. And this is just kind of more, I guess, kind of off the cuff and from the heart, as it were. But there was, I'm involved in the college ministry at our church, and they had a panel of speakers from our church community that were just kind of talking to the students about life issues. And one of them was singleness. And there was a gal that kind of spoke on the issue of singleness and just dealing with and struggling with the issue of singleness and not having that life companion, you know. And she's, I think, in her, I want to say 50s, I think, at least late 40s. I can't remember now, but I think 50s. And she has, I think, one or two children that are, I believe, grown now, and she lost her husband. Her husband died just a few short years after they were married, and you know, so she was a young mother at the time. And for whatever reason, God has not, over all these years, brought anyone else, you know, into her life for her to have as a companion to marry and to share her life with. And so she just talked about the struggle of that, you know. And she said that one of the passages that had really just ministered to her through all that time and all that difficulty was Philippians chapter 4, verses 4 through 9. And it's funny because I recognize the value in this passage specifically for me. I don't know, I want to say it was maybe a year or two ago. I couldn't tell you. But a while back, I committed this passage to memory, and I should really get back into refreshing my memory on it. It's one that's really worthwhile for me to meditate on because so much of it is about How do we handle our minds, you know? So Philippians 4, 4 through 9, in the ESV, it reads, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone.
The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. So you see kind of sandwiched there this context almost of anxiety, you know, in talking about in verse 6 there, do not be anxious about anything. And in verse 7, the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds. And then comes back to that idea in the end of verse 9, practice these things and the God of peace will be with you. So Paul evidently was talking to people who just needed some peace. They needed the shalom, the wholeness, the completeness an idea behind that word. They needed the shalom that Yahweh gives us, that sense of completeness and wholeness. So let me just kind of walk through this a little bit, and I'll just kind of make some observations that I've had about the text as I've kind of spent time, you know, pondering it and meditating, as you might say, on these words. First, in verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. And, you know, you go through the Psalms, and you see all the, I'm going through a study in the Psalms right now, have been for, I don't know, about a year or so now, with my study mentor, and you know, there's that word rejoice that shows up a lot, and I'm just like, man, I'm not very good at rejoicing, and I hadn't done a word study on it, and my mentor is really skilled in the languages, and so a few weeks ago, we're just kind of talking about that, you know, and I was saying, you know, I can get to the point mentally where I feel relief, you know, over what Christ has done for me and the grace and the hope that he offers, you know, but I'm not bouncing off the walls happy and excited, you know, and I was familiar with the idea of what it means to be blessed in the Old Testament, or happy as that's sometimes translated, and that's not necessarily bouncing off the walls happy, and neither is this idea of rejoicing. In fact, I happen to see in one of the lexicons I was looking at today that it refers to kind of like a calm happy. So it's not a bouncing off the walls, but it's this idea of contentment, you know, and the idea of relief fits very well into there. So you might not be experiencing, you might not at every single moment be able to be like, hallelujah, bouncing off the wall, gonna sing a song now, and, you know, but there are ways that we can rejoice still in the Lord always. And I think the rest of this passage kind of gives us some ideas of how that can really genuinely be possible. Verse 2, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. And the idea behind that word, if I remember correctly, I just looked at these earlier, I didn't make any notes, but it's the idea of, you know, not being like carried away by your passions and just being led around by your passions, but you're able to be reasoned with. You're able to, you know, to base your thinking off of that which is true, you know, which again, he's going to come to that idea in a few verses here. So, you know, let your reasonableness be known to everyone. So develop a pattern in your life to the point where, like, people will say, you know, Peter's a reasonable guy. He's not a guy that's led around by his emotions, and you know, he's a guy that will adjust and change his course as he is reasoned with. And then it goes on to say, the Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. So as we approach the throne through prayer, and we are asking him to help us in supplication, we're to do that with thanksgiving. With thanksgiving, we give those requests to God. Gosh, how do you do that? I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, it's so easy. I just want to rush to what I need, you know, instead of spending any time on thanking God. And sometimes, you know, I'll look at this verse and, you know, I'll feel convicted about it, you know, but even then I'll still say, okay, well, let me just boom, 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 list off these things. Yes, I'm thankful for A, B, C, but I'm not really dwelling on those things, thinking about those things and feeling the thankfulness for them, feeling the gratitude for them. But I think that it's important for us to do that. I think that's an important part. I think that helps to kind of tune and shape the kinds of things that we ask for. Having that attitude of, I was going to say gratitude, but that's lame. That rhyme was totally not intentional. But having that attitude, it will shape the things that we ask for. And some of the things that we thought we were going to ask for when we first sat down to pray, in my experience, you know, as I get into a genuinely thankful mode, it changes. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to ask for something. I'm going to modify that request. Cause that's not really what I need. I know that's not really what I need, you know? So going on, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And then what? And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So again, there's some way in which we experience the peace of God as we are thankful. So I don't really know how that works, whether that's something that, like, every time God faithfully does on just a supernatural level, or whether God just knows us so well that he just put this little recipe here and said, listen, you're going to experience my peace. Here's how it happens. You do this. You get to a place of thankfulness, and you're going to start experiencing some of my peace. That's just how I made you, you know? So whether it's something that he supernaturally does every time, or whether it's just like God knows us, he knows what we need, he knows how we work, and based on that, this is what we need. This is the process we need to go through to get to a place of thankfulness and a reduction of anxiety. He goes on to say, finally, brothers, whatever is true, and he gives this laundry list here of things, and I'm going to kind of skip to the end. So whatever is, and then laundry list, he says, think about these things. And then I don't think this is a new thought. I think it's kind of like a follow-up, maybe approaching the same issue from a different angle. He follows up that phrase, think about these things, by saying, what you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things. And then what? And the God of peace will be with you, he says again. So presumably Paul was a guy who thought about this laundry list of things. Probably did some other things too. That might not be the only thing that's included there, but I would guess that all the stuff he's talking about from verse 4 on, rejoicing in the Lord, being reasonable, not being anxious, but bringing thanksgiving, with our requests, and as well as other patterns. We could just look at Paul's life in general. But I mean, at least, you know, we can look at this and, you know, and just say, okay, well, what do we see here that Paul was practiced in doing? And let's imitate those things. Practice these things that you see in me, and the God of peace will be with you. This is how he interacts with us. So what is this laundry list here? Well, you could spend, and I would encourage you to do this. If you have issues of thought life with me, and usually when we think of, you know, at least from my experience, when you think of thought life, some, you know, you, especially if you're a guy, your mind goes to, yeah, it's some kind of sexual lust thing or whatever, you know, and I mean, that's, you know, that's, I think that's every guy's battle. Maybe not every guy's battle, but, if not, they got another one, I'm sure. But in this instance, when I'm talking about for me, most of the time when I'm talking about thought life, it's about like worrying. It's about my imagination running wild and me just worrying and letting my imagination get out of control and taking me to some dark places that are pointless and self-destructive for me to go to. So to counteract that, we have this laundry list here of things. And like I said, yeah, I would recommend going to, like, say, blueletterbible.org if you don't have another good lexicon that you can use, and do a word study on each one of these. Because you could, like take, I don't know how many there are, let's see here, true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, excellence,
worthy of praise. Okay, so that's eight things. So you could take a whole week and then do two on Sunday or something, I don't know, and spend a day doing a word study on each one of these words and say, okay, what does this word in the Greek mean? True or honorable or just. And then think about, okay, what are the things in my life that I could take my mind to that are just or that are pure or that are lovely? And just kind of add some new thoughts to your palette that you can draw from when your mind is just kind of getting out of step with God. Whatever is true, and I think it's so appropriate that he starts with that. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Let's deal with reality. Let's not go off into whatever crazy thoughts we might have, or worries or fears or speculations or whatever. Let's deal with what's true, okay? Whatever is true, think about that. That's where you start. And then more specifically, he moves on. Whatever is pure, so whatever is untainted, whatever is completely given over to God's purposes, whatever is lovely, I believe I just did a quick little look on that. I believe that refers to things that are pleasing, that are enjoyable. So I think you could even fit, you know, certain forms of entertainment in there that are just made well, and they just please you. And God wired you in such a way that whatever this, for some reason, seeing this guy, you know, travel through time, or, you know, for whatever reason, or like, or doing this cool sci-fi thing or this fantasy thing or whatever your concept is that you're really into, and you've got a favorite bit of fiction or entertainment that like scratches that itch for you, you know, that's something that God wired you to enjoy. That's a concept or a moment or a type of thing that God specifically wired you to take pleasure from. And so I think, you know, provided there's nothing in the mix there that's going to take you to a darker place, I think you can think about those things. But also, we, you know, that's just one of the many things. Whatever is commendable. So whatever is worth saying, you know what, this is something that we should pay attention to, that we should draw attention to, that we should all aspire to imitate. Whatever is commendable. If there's any excellence, and I believe, if I remember correctly, that specifically refers to like virtuous excellence. So whatever is pursuing virtues and is setting a high bar for itself and is really propelling itself forward in pursuing a virtue of some kind. If there's anything worthy of praise, I didn't look that one up, so I'll leave that one to you. Think about these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things and the God of peace will be with you. So how can we be thankful? How can we, you know, get out of the common American mentality of entitlement, where all we think about is the stuff that we want and don't think about all the stuff that God has given us, all the blessings, experiences, possessions, the promises, you know, all the things that God has given us? How do we get our mind on those things and actually really feel genuinely thankful and grateful for those things? I think one of the answers is where we spend our time with our minds. And also in imitating Paul and imitating other believers who are imitating Paul, who himself was imitating Christ, you know, imitate the models that Christ provides through his own life and through the lives of believers that are following him, through the lives of the writers of Scripture, by watching them and imitating them. That's where we can experience the peace of God, and that's where we can genuinely experience ongoing moments of thankfulness, and end up in a much better place than we are when we're just kind of allowing our minds to go wherever our crazy geek imaginations will take them. So hopefully something in that will be useful to you as you head into Thanksgiving and the rest of the holiday season. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind? Dang it. It wasn't the script change. What's on your mind? What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind? What's on your mind? What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? Crap. I think it's just the lead up somehow. Like, if I started with that, then I think I could do it maybe.
I should maybe practice. I should maybe edit this a little bit more. Sorry, I don't have time. So you're all going to have to suffer. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we've got to hear from you to do that. And guys, I know this is a script that I'm reading. I really mean these words every single time I say them. No, that's not true. Sometimes I am just reading the script because I got stuff on my mind. But I mean, the invitation is no less sincere for the fact that I'm reading from a script. So really, I do want you guys to help me shape this show, whether it's from your feedback or from your involvement. You can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.com. Well, I want to thank David Arrington for that review of Maggie. Man, that was on my bucket list. I was thinking to myself, I got to review this. I got to review this. But there was always something else, just a little bit more pressing, just a little bit more, you know, in need of attention. That was kind of like that. I felt like I needed to react to or comment on, you know, or it would, you know, slip through the cracks. And so anyway, thank you very much, David, for sending that in. I also want to thank Kevin McLeod for, excuse me, allowing the use of his Jingle Bells track during the Fallout 4 thingy that I had you guys listen to. Stay tuned for... almost done, Peter. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I am not exactly sure, but I think I'm going to review Selfless, which is the... I think it's like is it a body swapping or memory swapping? I don't know. It was some kind of like a sci-fi action thing with Ryan Reynolds that I missed because, again, there was, you know, something else that was a little bit more pressing and, you know, a bigger blip on the geek radar for everybody than Selfless. But I think I'm going to try and give Selfless a try present a CGC radar segment and kind of let you guys know what's been going on in the world of Christian geekery for the last little while. Till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth. I waited a little bit. Should I have waited longer? I should have pushed myself to wait just a little bit longer to finish that sentence.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Fremson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
All right, so that was episode 3-4.
I said 311 last time, didn't I? And it should have been 411. And now it should be 412. I've been misnumbering these or something. Anyway. So yeah, 412 now. Season 4 of Farscape. Kansas. This is the one where John comes out of the wormhole nexus, accidentally winds up at Earth. And Earth from like 1986. And it's a time travel episode, so, you know, of course it doesn't make any sense logically, because time travel never does. It always breaks down at some point. And especially in this kind of time travel story, which uses, like, the really loosey-goosey, like, Back to the Future rules of time travel. Basically, there's one event that is going to go kind of awry or whatever, like, you know, that they have to kind of... They have to change the timeline back, you know. Ooh, you know, he goes back in time, and by being there, the timeline is mutated or screwed up or whatever, and he has to figure out what's changed, and he has to go and isolate that and change it back to the way it was so that all hell doesn't break loose. And so they got to get his dad from not fly on the Challenger, which, of course, exploded in 1986. so anyway, this was a great episode for so many more reasons than I'm going to be able to remember while I'm making this recording. First, just some great comedy in this episode, with all the the cast of, you know, of the of Moya's crew adjusting to life on Earth. I mean, when Aaron is like learning the language using Sesame Street, it's so funny. I mean, again, there's that sweet, innocent joy that she is getting from learning the language, and she's just Claudia Black is amazing. I mean, I just love the way she said "Wheel of Fortune, Wheel." It's so freaking funny and sweet. And then when she's like learning, you know, watching Sesame Street, you know, and watching Kermit teach a little girl, you know, some kind of word or something like that, she's like, this girl is slow. <You know? laughs> She's just, it's just a wonderful, yeah, wonderful use of Aaron as a character in this environment. And then all the others kind of adjusting, you know, to life and exploring. I love the Halloween gimmick, you know, the fact that it's Halloween when they arrive, which allows them to get away with a lot and to interact with the world on a level that they wouldn't have been able to, you know, had they had to concern themselves with looking human, you know, which they still try to, you know, to a degree. But lots of fun stuff. And, you know, with the time travel stuff, even though it's not logical, it, again, as I said, I think last time, or the time before, I can't remember when I said this, it's a fantasy experience, you know? And so I can kind of enter into it, you know, as a fantasy, you know, as like a, this is, you know, who cares how it works? The point is, we've got this situation that we get to enjoy exploring, you know? And so, yeah, I love that John loses his virginity to Karen Shaw in the back seat of, you know, his pickup, and I think that was even set up in a previous episode not too long ago, but Karen Shaw turns out to be Chiana. John Crichton lost his virginity to Chiana. And the fact that, I mean, it's so in character for her to see this opportunity, you know, she gets away, she just wants to get into trouble. She's just such like a punk teenager. That's who her character is. She just wants to go and get herself into trouble and see what she can get away with. And she sees this opportunity to get away from the others. And here's John, this very young man, who of course all he's thinking about is sex at that age. And she's just like, of course I want to do this. I want to, you know, even though she's not like romantically involved with John, you know, there has been like some teasing, you know, of kind of like sexual tension between them a few times in the past. John, you know, on a non just like purely biological level, is not interested in Chiana. But I mean, there has been just those little moments of kind of like connection and flirtation and, you know, attraction and stuff there. And so, of course, Chiana is going to want to play with that and use this opportunity because she knows she's never going to get the chance with grown-up John. You know, this is her chance to get away with murder. I mean, it's just, it makes perfect sense in terms of her character, you know. And, it just adds an interesting dimension to the show. what else? Oh, and I love Rigel reacting to the sugar, you know, and John really, you know, being excited to drink milk, you know, something that you would forget about that's so common to us. And of course he hasn't had milk because there's no cows where he's been, you know, or sugarcane apparently, you know. So just lots of fun in this episode. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Some nice little bits of drama as John gets to kind of interact with his parents or see his parents in a different light. He has that moment where he's kind of spying on them and he sees them happy together and he doesn't really remember them that way. He didn't see that very often when he was a kid. And then we've got the tarot reading business, which is really interesting. I remember when I saw this episode for the first time, that would have been, well, around 2003 when this season was out. And certainly we were, you know, America was postmodern. But it was just interesting. I wonder if that speaks to Americans being more open to kind of like, you know, spirituality or whatever, or really, I mean, the occult, you know, frankly. Or if that speaks more to Australians having more of an openness to those kinds of like occult or pagan, you know, those kinds of spiritualism things, you know. It was just interesting. It just stood out to me because there was this kind of acceptance of it on the part of John, which was just really, it was just an interesting device for his mom to be doing these tarot readings. And I mean, maybe it's because I grew up, you know, largely around Christians, but I mean, I've never known anyone, certainly not in the 80s, you know, like a house mom that was into doing tarot readings, you know. That was just kind of an alien thing to me. So for some reason, it just struck me as strange and odd, and it just made me wonder, what motivated that choice to include these tarot readings as a device, you know, or as a story point? But as I think about them, that the device word does come to mind, because it was a convenient device to allow John to interact with his mother in a way that that would kind of make sense a little bit. She was open to these kind of supernatural type of things, and then John, you know, at one point when he's nearly going to be wiped out of existence, does the whole Back to the Future fading into a ghost type figure, and he interacts with his mom in that way. And so, I mean, maybe that's why they introduced that kind of like pseudo-supernatural spiritual kind of element, so that he could have this, give his mom this revelation that she would accept and not freak out about, in terms of like, you know, how could my son be traveling from the past to give me this message or whatever, that, you know. So maybe that was kind of why they put it in there. It just, when it was initially introduced, I was just like, oh, his mom's into tarot cards. That's really interesting. What I also thought was interesting was that, you know, she says to him, in the first conversation, before he comes to her as a kind of a pseudo ghost, she's doing this reading, and that's what she's doing the second time John comes to her, which again is just like, wow, she really did this a lot, didn't she? You know, but I mean, I you know, that's probably just they had to do that for the story or whatever, I guess. But but anyway, you know, she says, oh yeah, everyone thinks it's, you know, it's silly, you know, and he says it's not, you know, maybe, you know, it's not silly. Don't listen to them, you know. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Why is he saying that, you know? Because, I mean, he knows that... I just don't understand why he would say that in that moment. Other than he just loves his mom, he misses his mom, and he just wants to be a yes man for her in this moment. I mean, who wouldn't? If you had the chance to see your mother who had just died 4 years ago, you get a chance to see her again, you know, you're not going to spend that time disagreeing with her about her reading tarot cards or whatever other strange habit she might have had. You know, your instinct is going to be to want to just agree with her, get along with her, have a good moment with her, you know. But I think that kind of points to something that, you know, when we are feeling drawn to have these good moments, these peaceable moments with people that we care about, you know, we don't want to go so far as to say, as to agree with everything that might come out of their mouth, you know. It's kind of like when someone is grieving, you know, and they get up at their at the funeral of a loved one, and they just kind of spout off about all kinds of stuff that, you know, that's just kind of a mixed bag. I was at a funeral not long ago, you know, where someone said some stuff that I'm like, you know, I was thinking to myself, of course I didn't say this to them, but I was thinking, you know, that's not really true. But it's not the time to voice that kind of disagreement, you know. And so it's appropriate, I think, to stay silent in those moments, and that's not the opportunity to kind of voice that disagreement. And I kind of wish that John would have just been silent on the issue of the tarot cards instead of validating it. It just seemed like a strange choice for John to suddenly to be validating these tarot cards, you know. Yeah, just interesting. Anyway, that's about all I got to say about that episode. There's so much going on here. As I was watching it, I was tempted to like pause it at times and get out my phone and record some of this as I went through. But, you know, I long ago decided I don't want to do that. I don't want to disrupt my enjoyment of these episodes to record my thoughts about them. I just want to enjoy them. And then whatever comes to mind comes to mind. So anyway, but yeah, we are now, I mean, this is now at the point, if I remember correctly, where it's like my disappointment with season 4 was at an end, and things are just kind of really kicking the high gear, and they're really just, it's really just great Farscape, I think, from here on out, if I remember correctly. The season really did get off to a disappointing, rough start for way too many episodes. I mean, here we are, this is episode 412, you know, and we had 10 episodes where the show was just not getting off to the start that it should have, and it took this long to really kind of kick into high gear and get into what the story is going to be riding on for the rest of this season. But we're there now, and let me see. Let me just check really quick what's left. Okay, yeah, so there's just 10 episodes left. And there is maybe one or two that I felt like on the first viewing, I was like, "Oh, this is kind of a detour," but it's very minor. So yeah, this is good Farscape, you know, going out to the end here. I think. All right, so next time we will pick it up talking about Terra Firma.